If you were asked to go out, you know, like the same day or a day before, it was like you weren't available. You were so unpopular that you would be, if you were a popular person, you would be all dated up, so that maybe you would say no just because you want, you know how it is.
You wanted to prove that you were.
Right. But I thought, you know, that's not too wise. I said, yes, I'd love to. Which is probably lucky, because he said, if you hadn't said yes, I would have asked somebody else. And then it would have been different. So we went out to a restaurant to eat, and we had lobster. I had never had lobster in my life. And we went to see a movie, and at the end of the movie, in the course of our conversation, he said, well, when is your birthday? And I told him, and he said, don't you want to know when my birthday is? And I said, why would I want to know when your birthday is? I'm not even going to know you by, when that comes along. He said, oh, yes, you are. I'm going to marry you. So on our first date, he said, I'm going to marry you. And I said, really? But so that's what happened.
So the long road to Cooperstown continues with.
Okay. After 2 years in Syracuse, he decided he wanted to do an orthopedic residency. We went to Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, and this is just, I don't want to get so involved in details.
No, and whatever you'd like to say, and
Well, we lived in the top floor of a very nice house, but these people were sort of they lived in a very nice house, but they didn't really have the money to keep it up. But it was a nice place to live, except it was so hot in the summertime. And they had a very large white dog. It was some kind of a sheepdog, a Hungarian sheepdog, some rare breed, but it was also very large and very, not vicious, but it could be vicious. And in fact, the man or the resident who had lived in the same apartment with us said, you want to watch out for that dog. I always carry a baseball bat when I come home at night because I don't know what he'll do to me. Well, when we went to the door to interview them about the apartment, this dog leapt up on the glass door and he was looking me in the face. And for some odd reason, I wasn't a bit afraid of him. And in fact, he must have sensed that I wasn't afraid of him and that the people were so impressed that we weren't afraid of their dog that they didn't ask us any questions about whether we liked the room or the apartment or if we were suitable. They let us have it. That was the one thing I remember most, because my husband was away every other night. The family was gone during the summer. They weren't even there. And I felt quite a lot more secure to have the dog. They left the dog with me and would walk it around the streets at night to walk it when I got home from work. So it was nice to have that kind of companion. Anyway, my husband decided that he didn't want to be an orthopedic surgeon, and he had to fulfill his obligation to the military service. There was a doctor's draft at that time that other sections of the population didn't have a draft, but doctors did. And he had to fulfill that obligation. And so he went into the public health service and we moved to Portland, Maine, and he was at a clinic in Portland, and we lived there for a year and a half, almost 2 years. Our first child was born there, and he finished up his service in Cape May, New Jersey. And by that time, he had decided he wanted to do a residency in anesthesiology, and had chosen to go to Hartford Hospital, who had a very good residency program. And we lived in West Hartford, Connecticut, for 3 years while he was doing that. And at that time, we were lucky enough, again, to find this lady, an older lady. She was in her 90s, but she was very independent. She wanted to stay in her own home. But her son wasn't happy for her to be there by himself, so the solution was to have a family move in with her. Mm-hmm. And so we considered her to be the grandmother, and I did all the cooking, and she provided the space. So it worked out very nicely.
So what year did you guys arrive in Cooperstown?
We came to Cooperstown about 1961. Mm. Well, my youngest child was about 3 months old, and I've lived in... We didn't move into our present house for 3 years. We lived on the corner of Fair Street and Atwill Road, mm-hmm. because we couldn't make up our minds. We couldn't get together to decide where we wanted to live. He wanted to live within walking distance of the hospital, and I wanted to live out in the country because I wanted a big garden and I wanted space. Mm-hmm. He said, well, you can always buy land. So the house that we bought was within walking distance, and he said, and the moment we moved in there, I searched and found this property.
Tell me a little bit about the property and how you acquired it, when you acquired it.
I heard about it through a friend who said, there's an older lady, again an older lady, who wants to sell her property, but she's a little particular about who she sells it to. So he introduced me to Madeline de Berg. She was a lady who had owned this property, and there was more. She owned even more than the 100 acres I bought from her. She had owned it, and I think her family had done a little bit of farming on it, but she really wasn't a farmer or a farming type person. And she lived in a house on Sibley Gulf Road, and she was like the other lady. She wanted to live here as long as she could, and in the winter she would go back to her home in New Jersey. She was almost deaf and almost blind, but she had somebody who would come and help her during the time that she was here to take her places if she needed to go and to do the routine yard work and that kind of thing that she needed to have done. And I visited her a number of times, even after I bought the property. Quite a few times I would go up and visit her, and we would have a good time just talking. And she told me that she wanted to sell the property to somebody who would take really good care of it. And so I felt that was sort of a mandate to keep it as it was. And much later on, when I got the opportunity and thought about it long enough, I put the property into the Otsego Land Trust, so that other than, you know, when you do that, you you write out sort of a deed and stipulate what can happen and what can't happen on your property. And it's a deed that it's like giving the rights, the development rights, to the Otsego Land Trust. And so my heirs and anybody else who owns it subsequently will not be able to build 1,000 houses on the property. They will have to go by what we've set up as allowable.
So what are some of the ways you've ensured this natural state? How have you taken care of your land to make it this natural state?
Part of the land is not developable. There is what they call a building envelope. Each one of my children, if they so desired, would be able to build a house, but only in a certain area. And it's pretty close together, restricted to 5-acre plots. And then there's other things that aren't allowable, like I couldn't have a gravel yard, for instance, if I wanted to, or I can't cut down trees willy-nilly. I have to have it done under the supervision of a certified forester. You know, that kind of thing that will keep it basically unchanged. Forestry is allowed. I can cut trees, but it has to be through a plan that's set up by a certified forester, a New York State certified forester.
How has your family enjoyed the property over this span of time?
I think that my family enjoys it a great deal and continue to increase their enjoyment. My son built a lean-to very close to the cabin, or the cabin was very close to the lean-to. My son built it when he was 16 years old. And that was a great camping and picnic spot for the family for a long, long time. Even my grandchildren have loved coming there and spending the night or having a picnic with their friends. There's a pond that we built, had built. I caused it to be built. And that's been a nice swimming area. And it was stocked with fish. I think it's basically pretty well fished out by now. Skiing, they've done cross-country skiing on this property, and as I think I told you just lately, a ski club has helped me get the trails so that they're skiable with track skiing or with the skating skiing. And for 2 years, we really had pretty good seasons. Last year was not a good season for skiing any place in the area. I think they enjoy just walking on it. And increasingly, people are burning more wood. And after a couple of commercial thinnings, there's always a lot of tops of trees or cull trees that are left for firewood. And I think it's been an economic help to them to have a source of firewood.
Mm-hmm. Why did you choose to build the cabin where you did on your property?
Where I did or why I did it at all?
You can answer either there, both.
Well, I've always wanted a cabin. Mm-hmm. And at first I thought, I want just a small cabin, very rural, very rustic, not rural, very rustic. And I didn't have electricity put in, and I didn't have plumbing put in. I have a outhouse. So I have to carry water if I need to. If I stay overnight, I have to bring enough water for the use of, you know, for our use. And my husband and I used to enjoy getting away, just even if it was for a night, coming up. And even though there are neighbors, because of the way the cabin is situated, in the summertime you can't see anybody's lights, mm-hmm. and you have the illusion that you're way out in the midst of the wilderness. I finally decided that lights were necessary evil. It makes it much easier to cook and to read at night, not have to rely on a Coleman lantern. I also enjoy, believe it or not, taking a solar shower. A friend hooked up a place where I could hang a solar shower bag, and if you leave it in the sunshine for 3 hours, you can have a pretty good hot shower out in broad daylight. And it's so isolated that you don't worry about it, visiting people, visitors arriving.
You mentioned your son built a small lean-to. What other projects did your kids take on up here? Did they have little things they took care of up here?
No, I don't think they've had any particular projects. They've been in on my planning as far as when I joined the land trust, we talked about what would or would not be allowed on the land. And when I saw the spot that was cleared, I think I told you that after my last commercial thinning, the forester told me that if I cut out a section of trees, clear cut a section, a small section of trees, I would have a magnificent view of the lake. And at that time, because it was in a place where I seldom went in the winter when the leaves were off, but only saw it in the summer, I just really didn't believe that you would have a magnificent view of the lake. But there it is, and it was so nice, I decided I needed another lean-to, and that's been a very popular site. It hasn't been up very long, and in fact, just this past summer, I've been getting a fireplace built, and it's still not totally done, and so it's sort of still a work in progress.
Garrett told me that you've kind of been involved in environmental issues since the 1970s, really. Can you tell me about your long history of...
Well, I think I've always been interested in conservation, and I've always wanted my own piece of land, and it's sort of, in my mind, all tied up together. Right now, my biggest focus as far as conservation and protection goes is trying to keep the unconventional shale gas drilling from New York State, and specifically in this area. But it doesn't seem right that if it's not good for one area, it's not good for any area. So that's sort of my feeling, that it's not good for the economic benefit, even though they say there's so much gas there, it would be great for the economy. other writers have said there's not as much gas as people estimate, that it's harmful to the health of the community and those that are involved with gas drilling. And just there's just a host of problems with it, and it seems like we should be moving away from fossil fuels and spending our time and energy on trying to develop more sustainable uses or sources for our energy. And I think getting involved in this struggle has made me more aware of what I personally can do on a small scale, which probably isn't going to solve the problem, but it's at least a step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And so I think I've become a lot more conscious of the way I heat my house and the way I do my shopping and what foods I eat. And it just is a very big subject and a very big concern. Mm-hmm. I'm not explaining it very well.
No, you're doing fine. What do you think this fracking debate has done within the community of Cooperstown itself?
Within the community?
Yeah.
What do you mean, what has it done?
Have you seen as it fractured the community? Are people divided about it? What are you seeing in the community? Are people coming together over the issue?
In our area, I think there's more coming together. Mm-hmm. I think I've met a huge number of people that I would never have met before and feel a kinship with them because they have the same ideals and the same needs and the same purposes that I have. And these people I probably would never have met if I hadn't gotten involved in this movement. And I think we're lucky to be living right here, right in this exact spot, because I feel that the local officials that we have, for instance, this, I live, even though I live in Cooperstown, I also live in the town of Middlefield. Mm-hmm. And this property is also in the town of Middlefield. And attending Middlefield Town Board meetings and as a group, not necessarily just myself, but as a group working with those officials, I feel that that they've been moved to act in the way that we want them to act, and that they're not doing it just because we want them, but because they feel that it's the way to do it, the right way to do it. Stop ringing. whereas so many towns and in other places seem to have town boards that are just much harder to deal with, much harder to convince, much, just more stubborn and more not as open to new ideas.
So what's been your role within the movement?
My role?
Yeah, what have you been doing in the movement?
I started out by writing letters to the governor to say I wanted to have a meeting with him. And I've written many, many letters with that request. And I have managed to get a group of people to visit some of his staff in Albany. We've had at least three or four encounters with his aides and his staff. I have not been able to accomplish my original goal of actually seeing the governor. Mm-hmm. I have yet to hear of him, you know, meeting with anybody. Mm-hmm. And uh, Could we take a break? I really need to see.
Of course. We can.
I just want to make sure it's not Bennett and he has a question about the house.
Sure.